I'm Dr. Mark Pettis. Welcome to this webinar on natural nutritional ways to enhance your own GLP-1 production. I serve as the medical director for Essential Provisions. We are a whole food, nutrition, and human performance science company that has created meals ready to eat and nutritional sports blends that leverage much of the science that I've been sharing in other webinars, and the same can be true for this really interesting topic of natural nutritional strategies to enhance GLP-1 production. And so I'm going to just share my screen with you. And as I've shared in other webinars, I've been a physician educator for 40 years on the faculty of the University of Massachusetts Chan Medical School. And as a kidney specialist and as an integrative functional practitioner, you know, you see many trends come and go through the year. Some of these are promising pharmaceuticals that ultimately never live up to their promise. In the supplement world, a sort of wild west of unregulated and sometimes very, very helpful supplementation. Again, often more promises made than fulfilled. One interesting and what appears to be an exception, certainly in the field of obesity medicine, are the GLP-1 agents, these GLP-1 agonists, which essentially means that you're giving GLP-1 in much the same way that your body would produce it. So an agonist is a representation of what your body would normally produce, and it mimics that action in much the same way, except that you're giving it externally, and often in a much larger dose than what your body would produce. But the burgeoning research in the GLP-1 field is continuing to show many very positive metabolic health and weight loss effects. And often, you know, these are individuals who have tried everything and often confront very significant morbidities, from type 2 diabetes to obstructive sleep apnea to coronary artery disease, chronic pain from inflammation. So it's not hard to understand why there's so much interest in the GLP-1 agonist. So let me take you through on a very high level what some of that research is showing, and then we'll look at some things that you can consider if you're on a GLP-1 agonist. It's really important to be adopting a lifestyle strategy that will allow you to maximize the benefit you derive from that medication, but also at some point to help you transition either off that medication or to a much lower maintenance dose in a way that will allow you to hold on to the benefits that you have achieved. And that's of critical importance, and for which the data currently is very, very limited in terms of longer-term use of GLP-1 agonists. So just a few quick learning objectives. We'll look at the role of quality protein. This is a really big issue in natural endogenous internal stimulation of GLP-1 production. We'll look at the emerging role and fascinating role of fiber, the gut microbiome, and its role in GLP-1 production. And then lastly, we'll touch on a topic that is covered in more detail in a separate webinar on the importance of engaging your life in a way that synchronizes your circadian rhythms. As we'll look at, GLP-1, like all hormones in the body and like the gut in general, where GLP-1 is largely manufactured, is on a timer. These are biological cycles. And the more we can synchronize our internal biologic cycles, the more we can leverage our ability to maximize internal endogenous GLP-1 production. As I said, the research is burgeoning now. It hardly a week goes by when some mainstream peer-reviewed journal is not publishing a study on these agents. There's no question that these are very effective interventions for weight loss and for metabolic health. And by metabolic health, as I've touched on in other webinars, largely we're looking at weight around the midsection, what we would call visceral fat. These are very effective agents for reducing that. Visceral fat is really an inflammatory, insulin-resistant driver, an accelerant of aging and risk of all chronic complex diseases. So, an intervention that allows one to lose visceral fat is a very powerful intervention. Other aspects of metabolic health would include improvements in blood pressure, improvements in blood sugar, and ultimately improvement in lipids, namely reductions in triglyceride levels and increases in your HDL, or what is often referred to as your healthy cholesterol, your good cholesterol. Data right now is limited beyond 2 years, though GLP-1s have been around for several years. That early emergence were oral agents in the treatment of type 2 diabetes. For weekly injectables, you're looking at about a maximum of 2 year data currently. We know that adopting a more natural lifestyle nutritional strategy to optimize one's GLP-1 production is critical. And again, not only will you derive greater benefit from that intervention, but your ability to free yourself from that intervention in a more sustainable and certainly affordable, as there's still a great deal of debate over how to reimburse for what is very expensive medication, continues to be addressed. Another really big issue that's important if you're taking a GLP-1 is that while you can expect effective total body weight loss and reduction of your visceral abdominal fat, you can also expect to lose muscle mass. And this is a really important issue. As much as 30% of the weight that one loses can be from muscle mass. And as I've talked about in other webinars that I've done and a podcast that I do called The Health Edge, these are critical issues. Lean body mass or muscle store is one of the greatest predictors of longevity and metabolic health. We know that strength, we know that insulin sensitivity, we know that functional performance, the ability to stand, to lift, to climb stairs, to play with the grandchildren, to enjoy all that involves that functional capacity can be compromised greatly if one isn't paying careful attention to what they can be doing while on a GLP-1 or on any strategy to lose weight loss to best preserve that lean body mass. And there are strategies to do that, which I will share with you in this webinar. Now, GLP-1s are not to get too geeky on you here, but these GLP-1 is a hormone. It's a peptide, right? These chains of amino acids that exert very significant biologic activity when released into the circulation. GLP-1 is produced in the gut. And generally, after we eat, that will be a signal for the specialized cells in our intestinal tract. They're called L cells, and they produce GLP-1. And they generally do that in response to what we are eating. But what's really fascinating about this gut health relationship. And this is just a huge, vast area of research that's still very much evolving with more questions than answers, is the relationship between the food that you consume, the organisms, this microbiome in your gut, because it is the relationship between the fiber in your food, the nutrients in your food, the what we call the polyphenols. These are plant-based pigments that give fruits and vegetables color. These all seem to interact with the diversity and function of this trillions of microbes in our gut that produce metabolic byproducts, things like butyrate or propionic acid. These are molecules that signal the L cells to produce GLP-1. So it's not just the amino acids and the protein or the fat or carbohydrate directly enhancing GLP-1, but it are the secondary effects of the metabolism and the interactions between the components in what we eat and how the microbiome engages and metabolizes those components. And that is a just a very interesting and fascinating interaction. Now, GLP-1, when it's produced in the gut, doesn't last very long. It lasts just a matter of minutes. So these are rapid signals. Our bodies have evolved to produce these rapid spikes, which quickly come down. And we know that the gut is tightly linked with not just our immune system, which is just on the other side of our intestinal tract, but also the nervous system. All these, the gut has its own nervous system that is integrated with the rest of the body and the brain. So we know that what seems like a local interaction quickly becomes a systemic interaction as the immune system responds. GLP-1s can dampen an overaggressive immune response, lower inflammation. We know that signaling of GLP-1 as it affects the vagus nerve and the brain will affect satiety. And the greatest effect of GLP-1s in terms of weight loss and metabolic health is greater satiety that ultimately leads to a reduction in energy or caloric intake. So these are really fascinating interactions that we're learning a lot more about. But I wanted to just emphasize the complexity of the gut and these hormones that the gut ultimately produces, with many influences that we're still sorting out, but also nature's tendency to have rapid rise and fall, these pulsatile effects, because a weekly injection is a rise that sustains over several days. And that is a form or an introduction of GLP-1 that's new to nature. That is, while very effective for producing weight loss, satiety, and improvements in metabolic health, I just want to point out that this is not mimicking the rapid rise and fall throughout the day of GLP-1 when endogenously produced as, our great creator, the great source, designed for us. Now, when you look at the published literature in GLP-1, you're beginning to see extension beyond just weight loss and improvements in sugar and diabetic management. GLP-1 receptors are located throughout the body, and it is a manifestation of how important this very small protein peptide transmitter messenger is in the effects that it has. So we know, for example, in the brain that GLP-1 will seems to have some protection on our neurons. It can help with memory. It can affect stem cells. Stem cells are these if you will, sort of embryonic or cells that can have yet to mature that can help us produce new brain cells. When we're making new brain cells, we require stem cells in the brain to do so. These GLP-1 agents seem to affect that. They lower inflammation, and they tend to enhance our satiety, probably through leptin signaling. Leptin is a satiety hormone, and many people struggling with weight and insulin resistance and inflammation have leptin resistance. These agents seem to improve that state. So, numerous effects in the brain. We're starting to see published literature in the heart. So people with metabolic disease and with heart disease, and it's insulin resistance and hypertension and inflammation that drive all chronic complex diseases. So if you are dampening those drivers, not surprisingly, we're beginning to see in the cardiac research improvements in blood pressure, in endothelial function, the lining of your blood vessels. Ideally, they can expand to let blood flow when necessary and constrict when necessary. They are very flexible. With heart disease and with chronic complex brain disease, you lose that elasticity. So this is a very important function. We know that blood lipids are improved. We know that people with congestive heart failure tend to be better managed. And so we still have a lot to learn about the risk and benefit of these agents, but not surprisingly, we're beginning to see published effects of benefit beyond just weight loss. And the liver, and I think many of you know that dealing with weight and insulin resistance usually implies the presence of fatty liver, the glucose that just can no longer get in to your liver, your muscle, your brain because of insulin resistance, is ultimately becomes fat, and that fat will deposit throughout your body. The liver is an accessible place for that. It happens in muscle, it happens in other tissues, and those tissues, of course, become compromised. They can't function normally. Fatty liver has become an epidemic as part of poor metabolic health in 90+% of Americans, based on recent research. These GLP-1 agents, as people lose weight, tend to significantly improve fatty liver, inflammation in the liver, and this is another very, very important health benefit. We know that in the pancreas, that insulin secretion is increased, and the sensitivity, most importantly, the sensitivity of the cells that insulin act on is more sensitive. So one can lower blood sugars and lower insulin. That is the holy grail of improving the hand that you're holding with respect to your longevity, your quality of life, your risk for chronic complex disease. And if you have a chronic complex disease, the likelihood that it can be more effectively managed is enhanced. And then lastly, on the gastrointestinal tract, in addition to the L cells that produce GLP-1, we know that these agents will slow the emptying of the stomach, the peristalsis, the contractility. And that is another way that satiety is enhanced. There are side effects that can involve this paralysis. Those side effects are being more widely reported. We call that gastroparesis. That can be a real problem. And I've treated many people with gastroparesis through the years. It is a very difficult problem to treat. And while that is seen more commonly in diabetics, we need to follow this story very closely because this is every agent that is used, and enhancing GLP-1 in a chronic and sustained elevation, unlike those pulsatile changes that we normally see around meal consumption, may have unanticipated effects that obviously everyone in the scientific community and in the consumer community of these agents needs to be paying close attention to. So, what are some of the well-established ways to enhance your own GLP-1 production. One of the most important is getting more protein and protein of a quality that has a full representation of both essential and non-essential amino acids. And while there are a number of strategies to do that, I think without question, animal protein sources, and if people have deeply ethical, moral reasons why they wish to not consume animals, I would never question those decisions. I am here to just offer some information for your discernment. But we know that many people, certainly in my experience, the majority of people who minimize protein and ultimately fat intake, which is another way to really improve GLP-1 production, avoid many of those food sources because they fear for their health. And if that is the reason you're avoiding natural sources of protein, like pasture-raised meats or fat, then I would suggest you may want to reconsider that. I think the evidence is far more consistent with great deals of benefit relative to risk. That's sort of the opposite of what we've been told. And I realize there are some physicians out there that would disagree with me, but that's okay. I think contrast can be helpful, particularly as you consider trying different things, because it is within that contrast that we can begin to discern and choose more clearly. And if you experience a nutritional intervention where you're consuming more high quality and greater amounts of protein, you will realize greater satiety. You will also realize better preservation of your lean body muscle mass. You'll mitigate the loss of that mass, not eliminate it, but mitigate the magnitude of that loss. Ultimately, your health will be enhanced in so many ways. So I do recommend that one consider a wide and diverse range of both animal and plant-based protein. We also know that protein, and the research is really fascinating, would suggest that not only do we need more protein, but it may be more ideal to pace it, if you will. I'm using a phrase of my colleague who's on our board of advisors, Dr. Paul R. Sciarro, who's really one of the nation's experts on protein metabolism. His sort of concept of protein pacing would assure some measure of protein intake throughout the day with meals and maybe even at bedtime, or, at bedtime, meaning within a few hours of bedtime later in the day, because you don't want to eat too close to bedtime. But regular spacing, which really mimics this pulsatile effect of GLP-1, and when we consume our food and the macronutrient mix of our foods and the nutrient density of those foods is appropriate, we have a greater likelihood of mimicking these natural biologic patterns. We know that some amino acids tend to be more robust in their GLP-1, particularly the branched chain amino acids, valine, leucine. Leucine is a critical amino acid in terms of muscle protein synthesis. And again, while there are a number of sources of these, animal sources of protein have the greatest concentration of branched chain amino acids. You can do this on a plant-based diet, but one just needs to plan very carefully to get a diverse variety of plants to assure you're getting the full complement of amino acids. And understanding the bioavailability of a plant-based mix of amino acids will be lower compared to animal-based. As much as 30% lower. So one wants not only a variety of plant-based protein sources, but an adequate quantity to assure you're getting sufficient branched chain and muscle protein stimulating amino acids. In general, and this is another topic of wide debate. For anyone who's interested in diving more deeply into these topics, I encourage you to look at some of our essential provision webinars. But I also have a website and a podcast that I do with a friend of mine, John Bagnulo. He's a nutritional scientist, naturalist, an amazing researcher and educator. And John and I have a podcast called The Health Edge. I'm not here to promote anything. I get no commercial support for The Health Edge. I have no financial conflicts of interest there. It's simply a matter of translating the science because John and I have a passion for that and making it available to people who are interested and motivated to consider perhaps a slightly different way of thinking about their health and their ability to realize possibility that the conventional and consensus thinking doesn't necessarily often will not and likely will not get you there. So in general, I would say that the average person should be getting between 1.2 to 1.6 grams per kilogram. A kilogram is 2.2 pounds. For a an 80 kilogram person, that would be between 100 and 140 grams of protein a day, ideally dividing that with meals or between meal snack as a protein source. Now, if you look at fats, and like proteins, fats are a very powerful stimulus of GLP-1. And again, many of the fat sources that I think are extremely health promoting are often frowned upon, particularly if they come from animal sources. But if you look at eggs and particularly egg yolks, salmon, avocados, nuts, olive oil, whole fat dairy, particularly yogurt, fermented foods are just awesome in helping with GLP-1 production. Looking at stews, bison is one of the cleanest animals on certainly in North America, and is one of our go-to sources in our essential provision products for red meat. But if you look at the fat profiles of these foods, while they contain more saturated fat, these saturated fats, in my opinion, are much more resistant to oxidative stress and inflammation, which is the opposite of what we're often told to focus on seed oils, polyunsaturated fats, corn oil, safflower oil, canola oil, soybean oil. A lot of these plants are genetically modified, they have very high glyphosate content. These seed oils have lots of double bonds. That's what makes it a polyunsaturated. They oxidize easily. I really think that this is a much more nuanced story than what people have been taught and told by the medical community and by the quote-unquote experts. I'm not sure that there are experts on anything out there that I would receive without doing my own investigation, accept nothing at face value. I think for me that has been a very important principle. So we know that these healthy fats very much enhance GLP-1 production. And one way that they do that is they enhance bile secretion in your gallbladder and liver. Bile helps break down fat. And one of the microbiome mechanisms whereby GLP is produced in the gut is the interaction between the microbe and these bile acids. These bile acids, as it turns out, are metabolically active. They're not just detergents, if you will, that break fat down and allow you to absorb it. They have a wide range of metabolic activity. And it would appear that the quality of the microbiome diversity and where that microbiome is located, which should be predominantly in the colon, the large intestine, will produce bile acid signatures, metabolites that are much more insulin sensitizing and much more GLP-1 promoting. Now, fiber, as we've talked about in other webinars, is just important in general. You know, one of the big changes in the standard American diet is the ultra processing of food has stripped out a lot of the fiber. And fiber is so much more than just something that helps us stay regular with our bowel movements. I was taught that that was basically fiber's role, to be regular. I mean, you know, that's a good example of the level of sophistication of nutritional science that many physicians are taught, even today. And I'm a former associate dean of a medical school here in Massachusetts, and there still is not a whole lot in the curriculum that focuses on nutrition. But when you look at fiber, really one of the great values is the extent to which the microbiome ferments that fiber. It's food for the microbiome. And when you look at fermentable fiber sources, right, the cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, kale, Brussels sprouts, you know, low glycemic fruits like berries, you know, the peeling of fruits tend to be much higher in pectin and these fibers, these soluble fibers, you know, lentil, beans, really good protein sources, peas. Also fiber rich tend to be really helpful in that fermentation process. And that fermentation will stimulate, it's the byproducts like butyrate, which is a four carbon saturated fat, will enhance GLP-1 production. So fiber is important from, you know, fruits, vegetables, legumes. You know, whole grains are, you know, again, much higher in fiber, and they're a little more nutrient dense than grains that have been processed. But if you are trying to, if you're on a GLP-1 and by definition trying to lose weight, I do think moderating carbohydrates, even a more whole grain like oat or wheat, is a consideration because though they're better than the bleached flours, they can still have a high glycemic effect. And if you want to enhance your own ability to burn fat beyond what GLP-1 agents are doing to reduce your intake of calories, you will get a much more synergistic effect as you moderate higher glycemic proteins. And again, if you have a continuous glucose monitor, or if you're a pre-diabetic or diabetic, talk to your primary care provider about prescribing one. Your insurance will pay for it with those diagnoses. And it just allows you to see how you, the individual, will respond to foods that for you may not be as great as for someone else. And without knowing that data, it can be very hard, if not impossible, to make that discernment. Bitters are another class of plant-based foods that seem to have really intriguing metabolic effects. And this is a fascinating science that looks at taste receptors in our on our tongue and in our palate and the gut. One might think of these L cells as also taste receptors in the gut, if you will. So there are mechanisms where some signaling, in this example, the molecules that create bitterness in these plants will stimulate taste receptors in the palate and these L cells in the gut, and that will enhance GLP-1 production and will improve insulin sensitivity, might reduce your blood sugar and glucose levels, can enhance diversity and metabolic health of your microbiome and gut, can enhance improvement in what might be leaky gut, which is a chronic source of inflammation for so many people. So, you know, from berberine to bitter melon to kale, broccoli, dark chocolate, grapefruit, you know, these are really nice sources of bitter molecules that stimulate these bitter taste receptors and will enhance signaling of GLP-1. So introducing these occasionally into a meal each day, along with higher protein, higher fat, and low glycemic plant-based fiber-rich carbohydrates is an ideal nutritional roadmap to get more acceptance and production of GLP-1. And then lastly, and I talked about this a bit more in the circadian rhythm webinar, and there's also a lot of information on this on my website, the Health Edge podcast. We know that the gut, like every cell in the human body, is on a biologic timer. The Nobel Prize was awarded to the Boston scientists that elucidated this back in 2017. And many Americans, for many reasons, have lost their synchronization with day-night circadian biology. This biology is a deeply etched evolutionary survival biologic adaptive mechanism. So when we spend 95% of our time indoors under non-native, unhealthy artificial lighting, and 5% of time outdoors where the quality of the lighting is ideal to promote human health and to synchronize and entrain circadian rhythms, you can appreciate why that disruption will undermine human health, as it does at every level, from heart disease to cancer to obesity to diabetes to depression to Alzheimer's and degenerative neurologic diseases. Chronic disruption of circadian rhythms will wreak havoc with human health and will reduce your health span, will increase your morbidity, and will create a slippery slope of diminished quality of life as one gets older. So it's really important to understand and embrace some simple strategies to allow your biology to resume that synchronization. The Light Doctor, this was is a really great book by Dr. Martin Moore Ead, who's a Harvard biologist who helped elucidate circadian clock biology. This is one of the most complete and comprehensive texts on this subject that I have read. This came out last year. Also, some good suggestions for blue blocker glasses, for blue free lighting, and what to look for when you're purchasing light bulbs. And these are powerful lifestyle interventions that are not expensive. And so lighting is important. Getting 10 to 15 minutes of unprotected, no sunglasses, as much skin exposure as possible light within the first few hours of sunrise and toward the end of the day, sunset is critical. And the more light you get, the more light you can be exposed to with less risk. You develop that, what we would call a solar callus. We fear light today in ways that generations before us would laugh at, quite frankly. Meal timing is important. And again, time-restricted eating between sunrising and sunsetting, depending on the season, the latitude you're at, is really important. That is how our human biology is driven. So if you're eating a meal at 9 p.m. and you're going to bed at 10 p.m., your timing is such that from an evolutionary biologic perspective, that will be disruptive because those were not the patterns that we've evolved to be in relationship with. Also, if you're eating that 9 p.m. meal under compact fluorescent lighting, you're getting a lot of blue lighting. That will become the perfect storm of circadian disruption. More time outdoors, what we would call forest bathing. I have a separate webinar on that I would encourage you to check out. But being outdoors as much as possible is really, really important. And yes, if you're out during peak sun, you want to be protected. Clothing is important. Sunblocks are obviously important. The Environmental Working Group has an app, a database called Skin Deep. And you can put in the brand of the sunblock that you like, and it will give you a sense of whether that sunblock has toxins in it. Many do. So, a parent may be well-intentioned as they lather that sunblock on their 2-year-old, not knowing that that sunblock contains endocrine-disrupting chemicals. And so one wants to not only protect during that peak sun exposure, but protect in a way that is safe. Again, warm LEDs are much better than these compact fluorescent bulbs, particularly in rooms that you're spending more time in after sunset, your bedroom, the family room. Blue blocking glasses, I wear these a lot after sunset. If I'm watching a sporting event, even though I have my blue blockers activated on my laptop, on my smartphone, I will tend to wear these just for that added protection. During the dark season, certainly getting more full spectrum lighting, 10,000 lux for 30, 20 to 30 minutes in the morning hours over that fall winter season, particularly if you're at a northern latitude, say above Atlanta, north of Atlanta, can really help with that full spectrum lighting. These happy lights are kind of like a sunrise. They mimic that sunrising, more intense blue light. That's the time of day you want that. That will help with sleep patterns on the at the other end of the day, and will help synchronize your circadian rhythms. And so that's just a brief overview of some natural ways that one can enhance their GLP-1 production. I hope this was helpful to you, and I wish you well, and stay well, and peace along the journey.